Welcome to the Constituent Servicing and Federal Agencies panel, sponsored by Xerox. Here's your moderator, Jason Miller.
You're in store for an excellent panel discussion today. Our panelists are Gwen Costin, Director of the Digital Services Innovation Center in the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at the General Services Administration, Amanda Nguyen, the Director of Web Communications for the Department of Agriculture, and Ron Woody, a Senior Solutions Architect for Xerox Federal. Welcome, panelists. Well, before we get started, let me just set some context for our discussion. Customer service. We hear that thrown around government a lot. But really, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about the customers? Who are the customers? Citizens, businesses, other federal agencies, internal federal workers like yourself, state and local governments, even international governments and other customers. Unlike most businesses who can say, my audience is this person or this type of people, federal agencies, there seems to be harder to define who they are. For USDA, for instance, you could say, well, farmers. But everyone can be a farmer. I have a garden in my backyard. I'm a farmer, right? At GSA, you could say, well, maybe it's federal agencies with the Public Building Service or vendors with the Federal Acquisition Service. But it's not so straightforward if it's just those people. In many ways, the customers are 300 million American citizens and businesses and people like that. The last two administrations have spent a lot of time and energy promoting better customer service. Many of you will remember the citizen-centric, results-oriented, market-driven mantra of the Bush administration. The Obama administration came in with the idea of improving citizen engagement, open data to more people, using tools like crowdsourcing and the data paloozas to really reach out to more people and bring them into the conversation. Including Federal Chief Information Officer Steve Van Roekel said recently, he talked about the need to embrace the notion of two-way customer service. He says budget pressures really are forcing agencies to rethink how they can most efficiently and effectively serve their internal and external customers. And in fact, he says he's challenged deputy secretaries to talk about the great things they're doing in customer service and then share it and scale it across more of the government. And it's not just the executive branch who's focusing on customer service. The House passed in April 2012 a bill requiring agencies to improve their customer service. Both the House and Senate introduced similar versions of that bill in April 2013. Neither bill this year has advanced beyond the committees, but obviously the attention to it is real. Still, the focus and desire for better citizen services, more timely, more responsive interactions with citizens and businesses is clear. So with that context in place, let's get on with our conversation. Once again, our panelists today are Gwen Costin, Director of the Digital Services Innovation Center at the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at GSA, Amanda Nguyen, the Director of Web Communications for the Department of Agriculture, and Ron Woody, a Senior Solutions Architect at Xerox Federal. I'm going to turn to Gwen first, since you get the joy of serving both internal and external customers in a big way. How do you define customer service?
I think it's important that we think about customer service not from the point of view of how we define it. The customer defines the service. And I think that we're seeing in government a challenge in meeting those expectations of the citizenry in 2013, 2015, 2020, and beyond. So how is it that we are going to be able to meet those expectations? And so I don't know that we define the services as much as our customers are defining it for us.
But how do they define it for you? And I'm going to go down the panel too, but you bring up an interesting point. If the customers define it, meaning their expectations,
that's correct,
their desires.
That's right, and what they expect from us. So I think that the challenge in government and in the private sector as well is to help define and to be forward about what you are offering as your service. So, you know, really understanding, you know, what, defining the expectations. A great example, I'd say, is one of the things we're seeing that I think is appropriate is people are interested in kind of what the status is of a request they have. So where is their request in a process? It's almost like the pizza tracker, where it's like, you know, somebody's picked up the pizza, they're delivering it, and it's at your door. So how do you kind of define that? So IRS, for example, has been doing a lot of work in identifying where people's tax refunds are. That's something that people care about. I mean, it's information that the IRS can provide to them. So it's really helping to identify those expectations. So to have success in that space, IRS has to first of all say, we're going to provide you this information within a certain time frame and then meet that expectation.
I love the analogy of a pizza tracker. There's nothing better when you order pizza from company XYZ, and you can see, okay, now it's the person's playing with your dough, and the person's saucing it. Can you imagine with the IRS? Now you're being audited. Let me move to Ron real quick. Ron, from Xerox federal perspective, you have multiple customers. You have
Correct.
Federal customers. You have commercial customers. How are you guys looking at or defining it?
You first want to have a conversation about the mission. What is the agency's mission? What is the company's mission? Who is their constituent? What are they wanting? The beauty of working across different agencies, which GSA gets to do also, is when you're talking immigration, it's completely different standards and it's completely different quality as opposed to when you're working with, say, CMS. And I think one of the things that with the customer service bills that are going through is the government needs to understand and consider that the rep could do a great job on their immigration call, but the answer to the question was, we're going to deport your wife next week. Where the person helping the older person with the pharmacy prescription drug plan did just as good a job, but they got to understand that the rating they're going to get from immigration is going to be a lot lower. So the standards need to be raised and consistent, but they need to understand that the right answer may not get you the result you want on the customer SAT scores.
I want to go delve deeper into that idea of standards need to be raised for a second. When you talk about standards, meaning what the outcome is, what the output
Correct.
Is, or how do you define standards?
Well, you really want to look to first call resolution. I mean, a lot of times when you look at some of the stats out, whether it's commercially or through the government, people want to call and get the answer once. They don't want to call repair and then have to call in for a part, then call in to set the appointment once the part's in. They want to be able to know who they're speaking with and is that one person going to be able, you know, the one-stop shop, which I've been doing this for about, you know, 10 years with the federal government and longer with the state. We've been driving towards that one-stop shop. Well, if you've got a patent application going through, you may have five or six different people handling that, and you've got a different phone number to call. And I think that's the challenge, that whether you're, you know, whether you're commercial or public, that you have you got to find a resolution to that.
Absolutely. And I think talking about when you want to make one call, you also want to talk to somebody.
Correct.
You don't want to talk to the recording. Please press your buttons here. Amanda Nguyen from Agriculture. Now, you have a much different type of constituency. In fact, because you're the director of web communications, how do you look at customer service? Are your customers both internal and external, or where do you kind of lean, if you will?
So that's the great opportunity and challenge about Department of Agriculture, because really everyone is our customer. Whether you're a farmer or rancher, or you are going to a national forest this weekend to enjoy the last of the fall foliage, or, you know, coming into the holidays and thinking about what kind of food is going to be on your table. It's really a great challenge, because you have to think of the right ways to engage with those customers. So it's absolutely not a one-size-fits-all. And as Gwen and Ron both said, you know, identifying your audience and starting with your mission, but also figuring out, what do we want to get out of this? Is it a simple awareness exercise? We want people to know about healthy food choices they can make. Do we want them to apply for a grant so you actually have that transaction? So all of those pieces come into putting together whatever type of moment it is, whether it's on web or mobile or in person even. It's not all digital. So considering all of those factors for us really makes for a positive customer experience.
I think you bring up something that's very fascinating, the idea of it's not just one way, meaning not just web or mobile. Mm-hmm. There's an in-person factor. You still have a huge amount of people who don't want to go on a computer and send an email, or a person who doesn't want to just do a chat. They want to talk to a human. Mm-hmm. As your job in the web communications, you have to kind of bring that perspective in without just saying, well, we'll just put it online. We'll have them fill out an application. They'll get a chat. Mm-hmm. Or how does that play? Who do you work with? Or maybe you are the person to bring that kind of personal side, or that phone call or mm-hmm. email letter side, or whatever approach you're using.
Yes, it's an extremely important point to make, because radio is hugely important in rural America. And
we like to think radio is very important in,
exactly.
in the city.
Everywhere.
Too. Everywhere.
You know, but talking
AM
to
radio.
Folks, that's right.
I just want to let you know that.
Yes, AM radio all the way. And we have a fantastic radio production team, but we also do video, and we work very closely with other constituent teams in our agencies. So at USDA, we have over 29 different agencies and offices. So I have the benefit of working with those programs who actually have boots on the ground in these communities. So it's not that they're speaking to, you know, some government person. They know the individual in their community who can help them interpret that new program or service to get what they need for their farm or business grant or whatever it might be.
Let me shift over to Gwen for a second. Gwen, now you have the beauty of Pueblo, Colorado. Everybody knows the send away for your pamphlet to Pueblo, Colorado. Everyone keeps wondering when that's going to be shut down. And I think the answer is never, right? I mean, maybe never is a far time.
I don't like absolutes.
Okay. But not for a long time, because people still want to touch something. People want to talk to someone. Talk about how you guys balance the digital side with the people side or the non-digital side.
Well, I think that, again, as I said before, the customer is going to be defining what that service is, and it's meeting those needs. But one of the things you said a little bit ago, though, was that people want to be able to talk to a person. I actually don't want to talk to the person. I want to make sure I don't have to talk to the person. So if the process is set up well, I'm not going to have to talk to someone. And so what do we do to kind of identify a better process and more seamless processes in order to avoid having to make very many interactions that are direct? Success for me means it's frictionless. And I think that as we're looking at the different ways that we're delivering information, it's not all one way or all another way, but if I could get the information in a frictionless way, whether it's online or whether it's via pamphlet or listening to a fabulous radio show, I'm fine with that. If I'm getting a government service by a third party, that's fine with me too. I don't need to know where it is. It needs to be invisible to me. So that I think that the big challenge is really, looking at the way we've been doing things all along and ways to modernize them and improve them. Because I think that that's one of the challenges. And this is not a problem just for government. I think it's a challenge for any legacy organization. People's expectations are being set right now by online-only play. And what by that I mean, Amazon is an online-only play. Facebook is online-only. And they've been able to take advantage and build their systems around the cloud and around data, around web services. For the rest of us who have history and ways of been doing things, I think the Department of Agriculture is a great example of a huge history and expectations. How do we kind of take the way that we've been servicing customers and bring it into the 21st century?
Go ahead, Amanda.
And if I may, that's exactly the conversation that we're having. And, we have century worth of data in USDA, and so we're working very hard to optimize that for new kinds of users, whether they're researchers or developers or people looking at sustainable ag production globally. Making this data accessible for new business opportunities is not a new concept for USDA, but it's happening at a much more rapid pace. And also, I would say, historically, we've always said, well, just go to the website. It was the mothership. And it is important. However, I think the data that we have, whether it's through analytics or actual touches on the different platforms, we're able to tell, okay, even if our customers aren't telling us because they don't want to respond to that survey or they just don't drop the comment in the box, we know that people are hitting this type of content on mobile devices. So, hey, let's pursue a mobile application. Maybe Forest Service maps should be mobile instead of only having to have the paper you unfold. So that's very exciting. And we have all of these different sources to tell us how to better align our interactions, our services and programs for a kind of new citizen.
And I think related to that is really where In some cases, we're victims or we're shackled by our prior successes and our prior good work that we've done. And so as we're making this transition, it's very hard. One of the discussions we've been having at GSA around the Presidential Innovation Fellows program, and some Presidential Innovation Fellows have been working on a project for MyUSA, which is really how do we take a look at the services that are and information that's available on USA.gov. How do we really take that citizen experience and make it kind of the same across government? One of the that's a big hunk of work to be done there, but one of the areas we've been working on has been doing with forms. But when we're talking about forms, we're thinking about you fill out a form. But it's really not the form we care about. It's the information. So we take the form, which is just a data collection tool, and we say we're going to talk about forms. But we don't care about the form. What we care about is the information and getting that within our systems. And so we have to transfer the way we think into a new way to meet these new expectations and this challenge.
Ron, we got about a minute, so and we're going to come back to you, actually.
Sure. To follow up on Gwen's point, it is the information flow. It's the work process. It's not about just receiving the mail or receiving the application. You have to be prepared to receive the information, whether it's coming in scanned, whether it's coming in faxed, and then present it to the people that are making the decisions in an intelligent manner, get it in front of them so they can make the decision more efficiently and give better customer satisfaction, better care. So it is about the flow, like Gwen's saying.
That's a good ending point for this first segment. We're going to come back and have you pick up on a couple of things that both Amanda and Gwen talked about. First, we're going to take a break. You're listening to a panel discussion, Constituent Servicing and Federal Agencies, brought to you by Xerox, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Federal contact center agencies are facing a seismic generational shift as an estimated 40 million baby boomers approach retirement and a growing number of millennials enter the workforce. Is your agency ready to handle this shift? Contact center consolidation is an excellent way to realize efficiencies and improve constituent satisfaction. Learn how Xerox can help your agency meet the needs of all citizens who have questions. Visit Xerox.com/are you ready. That's Xerox.com/are you ready.
Welcome back. You're listening to a panel discussion, Constituent Servicing and Federal Agencies, sponsored by Xerox, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Our panelists today are Gwen Costin, the Director of the Digital Services and Innovation Center in the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at the General Services Administration, Amanda Nguyen, the Director of Web Communications for the Department of Agriculture, and Ron Woody, a Senior Solutions Architect for Xerox Federal. Now, we kind of ended this on the idea of changing your processes. You can't just live on your old successes, right? You got to continue to move and change. Let me start with Ron. When you approach your agency customers, when you're looking at your commercial customers, how do you help them, or how do you work? What are you seeing about changing processes? Because it's that old, you know, culture. You know, no one wants to change. Everyone likes what they've been doing.
Well, everybody likes what they've been doing, and I think again they have to realize what information are they giving out. Is it just a status check? As Gwen mentioned earlier, you can go to the IVR, the Interactive Voice Response System, for real quick information. But if you're choosing a prescription drug plan, if you're trying to get a patent through, it's a little different process. You still need to, you can tighten up the methodologies and the communication methods, but you can't choose a prescription drug plan in 140 characters. So, I mean, there's still that need for the traditional. One of the things, good or bad, what you think about the healthcare initiative, so many people at the lower end of the economic scale needed health insurance. Well, what they had to have before they could even do that was an email address. So some of them coming in to try, so we can keep talking about, but we need to realize what is the information we're trying to give, who are we trying to reach, and then those are the questions you ask, and then how to do it more efficiently and better.
And basically what you're saying is before you say, you may look at your customer service approach and say, we're doing a pretty good job. You know, we get high ratings. People right. seem to, it's very similar to what Amanda was saying, where we can see where people are coming to us and how long they're staying on the websites. But even when you do that, you still then have to step back and ask these broad questions.
And are you using the data? Because we all know in the communication methods, there's more data than you could ever realize. But are you using that to predict where's it headed? Where are you going? Are you seeing problems now that you need to start addressing before it becomes an issue? And I think that's where predictive analytics and some of the, you know, audits that are done, whether third party or internal, help with improving the constituent care.
I definitely want to go down the path of predictive analytics, but let me turn to Amanda real quick. You guys are modernizing some of your outreach efforts, your customer service efforts. Talk a little bit about the Farmers Market Initiative.
Yeah, so this is one that we're really proud of because it connects a lot of people with their food producers and also helps them understand kind of that local economy, which is great. Several years ago, we used to survey farmers market operators and managers by paper, which a lot of groups still do, I'm sure. But we kind of took this online, if you will. And it was all by word of mouth. So we knew where most of these are. But for new markets, or if there's a new vendor who may not be in the directory, so when people go to look for it, they don't know, oh, I can get duck eggs as well as, you know, cauliflower and good stuff like that. So what we did was, over a few years, the Agriculture Marketing Service really modernized not only the process of collecting this information, but how it's delivered to the public. Social media has helped tremendously in this space. People are interested in farmers markets. I mean, in the D.C. area and nationwide, this is really kind of the hub of community on the weekends that even goes so much deeper. But people would see our surveys that we were promoting online and say, is your market provider in the directory? So suddenly we had these people asking their local produce guy or meatmonger at the market, hey, are you in this directory? And then we would get more responses. This past year, the directory is now available as an API, which is really exciting because the value of our service is not just on its own, but it's when paired with and tripled with and just mashed together with all of these other resources that suddenly make it a more useful tool and kind of part of people's community and their daily lives. So that's one very real example that people may not think about USDA, but it's really supporting local business.
Things I really love the most about this example is that when you're looking at farmers markets, it's really feeding into this bigger piece of what's happening in people's lives. Locally sourced, you know, that hipster kind of culture, you know, things that are close to home, more natural, you know, you could make your kale flakes or you could get, who would have thought the beets would get so popular?
Who'd think that would be popular? Really? Kale?
Locally sourced, though,
not that I even think it's kale.
And so part of it is that's brilliant about this is that USDA, from the government standpoint, can then actually feed into what's already happening and then provide a service that wasn't of value before, but is actually feeding in to this model. And then by using APIs and making it all open, it really just drives it forward.
And it even gives us entry to have a broader discussion. So yeah. People who had never thought about farming, now that we got their attention with farmers markets, we can talk about food hubs and how big of an impact these have on larger communities for the more regional aspects and really sourcing schools and other community facilities. And then you can talk about kind of beginning farmers and ranchers. So it kind of tracks back. So once you get people with the farmers market, suddenly they think, oh, well, where does my food come from? And you can kind of trace it back and have those conversations.
In many ways, when you talk about putting this information out as an API, it's following the administration's goal of open data in the sense that, okay, well, let's see what people can do with it. The first thing when you talked about API, the thing I could think of was Yelp for farmers markets. Mm-hmm. Oh, I like Gwen's duck eggs, but Ron's cauliflower is always rotten, so don't go to... And all of a sudden you're going, what did I just walk into? But yeah. people really, I mean, if you look at the popularity of some of those sites, are you seeing companies or individuals mm-hmm. kind of creating apps based on that API?
We are. And it's really exciting because a lot of it is local, right? So people in the Pacific Northwest may have different needs than, you know, we do here in the Mid-Atlantic. So it's completely personalized and it is relevant to those users, which I think is the most important part here.
And Ron, doesn't that also then make the federal government kind of that reach, that impact that the federal government has? When they can put out data, when they can make an API of it, that just expands it. But also, in many ways, people go, where'd you get that data? Oh, I got it from USDA's website. Oh, wow, I didn't think to go there. It's all part of that expectation.
Well, and again, it's all about information. And it's, I mean, some companies like Zappos, for instance, they've encouraged their reps to tweet, and they have followers. Their customers follow them. Now, you have to have a trust level, and you have to have a trust factor in your employees that you can put that communication method in their hands. And that's one thing that whether you're commercial, whether you're government, whatever the case may be, you have to make people aware of what does this mean when the information's immediate? What can actually happen? What's the positive? There's tons of positive, but we also need to be conscious of what can happen on the negative side. But it's unique. One of the things with safety issues, I think when you see in FEMA, when you see USDA with the National Forest Service, being able to track the forest fires and know which forests are closed, when you need to leave from your fishing trip to get out of there. I think that's the immediate information that's extremely valuable.
Amanda, one of the things that Ron brought up was the feedback, positive, negative. What do you guys have a policy about feedback? If someone writes back and says to you, hey, your website is awful. Do you respond or hey, the opposite? Hey, this was great. I never realized how many farmers markets I had in my area. Do you have that feedback loop?
We do, and it's across many platforms. So we hear it on Twitter. A lot of our agencies have their channels. And, you know, the good thing about having this decentralized model is that it's not just me and my one social media person who are kind of keeping our eyes and ears open on these different social platforms is all of the agencies. And as we shift the culture and people become more aware of the value of these conversations, that suddenly we have all of these other agents, you know, who can kind of keep their ears open and bring it into their own program. So it's not always us identifying them.
But do people share with you? Do you get, mm-hmm. for instance, the secretary writes to you and goes, hey, someone really didn't like what we did. Can you respond to this? Like, do you get that type of feedback, not just from the secretary, but mm-hmm. anyone?
It absolutely happens. And also on our blog, we have a lot of comments, you know, just like any platform, some more constructive than others. But it's great to hear what people are thinking, because that helps us be better communicators and better public servants. Likewise on Facebook and just all of the other platforms, you know, you start to see a trend of what's important to people at this moment, and we can better tailor our outreach to not be tone deaf to what people actually want.
Gwen, let me turn to you on social media, because I think Amanda brought up a couple of times on, we see it on Twitter, we see it on Facebook. From your perspective, because GSA has been out in front on social media in so many ways, do you find that that's an echo chamber? Meaning if somebody hates something, then all of a sudden a lot of people hate something. And then are you really getting useful feedback? Or how do you measure the social media feedback versus feedback you get through other channels?
That's a really great question, Jason.
Thank you.
The challenge, and again, you know, this is not just our challenge, this challenge for Zappos as well, is really trying to, it's more art than science at this point in terms of the evaluation of this information. You know, there was a colleague of mine who said that every piece of criticism is a gift. And we really learn a lot, not just from the praise that we get, but from the gifts of criticism. And part of it is doing an analysis of understanding what that criticism is. It's, I mean, I'm saying it's like, it is personal. It's coming from different places. And so sometimes what somebody's complaining about is not, or criticizing, is not necessarily what they're stated. It's really something else. So they're angry at the end of the process, but it was the beginning of the process that made them mad. And so it's really taking the time, again, to look at the processes and to understand where are those inflections and where is it that those challenges coming out. I think social media helps us out a lot, and not just looking at what people are saying about us, but what people are saying about everything. And so we always have to be outside of our own bubble. So it's not just about what's happening within government, but what's happening external to government, too, because there are tons of lessons. And for the public and for our customers, they don't exist only in the time they interact with government. They exist all the times they don't interact with us. And so we really need to be aware of, you know, what are trends going, how are people talking. Use of hashtags is a great example in terms of using Twitter. You know, how do people expect for you to respond? And then I think the other challenge is really how to you deal with criticism, whether it is an echo chamber. I mean, there are certainly times where people have access to grind, but even in those cases there are things to learn.
Do you guys have a policy at GSA about responding to positive or negative comments through social media? Or do you take it maybe offline and try to email them separately, or if there's a way to contact somebody?
There are policies, and GSA has been in the forefront of social media policies. But the application of policies are really, you know, dependent upon, like, what is the issue that's going on, what is the topic, as well as what the venue is.
Ron, let me turn to you. When you work with customers and they talk about social media, where does that fall into the need, the improvement around constituent services?
The issue is, when it comes to constituent services as opposed into commercial world, is commercial, you can always do something about it. If you're that rep, you may have a policy where you can give them a free hamburger. You can do something like that. You can address it almost immediately. If you're a rep for Medicare and you're not going to pay that bill, you can't change the law. And I think as citizens, we don't always understand that, because I can go to McDonald's and complain. I can go to Pizza Hut and complain, and I get something. If I go to the government and complain, they can't do anything about it. So, again, it's the difference in the two levels. But as we've been trained as citizens, as consumers, that if I yell and scream loud enough, then I get my way. But they can't change the law. And that's part of what you – it's part of training. And it's what you have to do for your representatives, for the people sending out the information and things like that.
Amanda, do you agree with that? Can you not do anything if you're in government? You can be empathetical. You can say, okay, I understand you're frustrated. Or can sometimes you can help with a resolution somehow?
It certainly depends on the issue, as Gwen mentioned. I think a lot of times people just want to be heard and know that they're heard. So when we hear that feedback, whether it's positive, negative, or neutral, And when it is the right moment to kind of respond and give them an answer or get them to the person on the phone who can help resolve that home loan or whatever it is, like that's an extremely important moment because I think in many cases, people aren't expecting to hear from us.
And I was going to say the same thing, that a lot of times when we get complaints at Federal News Radio, I write people back right away and say, you know, thanks for the note. I didn't realize mm-hmm. And I've gotten more times than not where you think it's a really nasty email. Someone goes, oh, thanks for responding so quickly.
Yeah.
So both are laughing. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I get to see in my role as director of Digital Service Innovation Centers, we get to work with agencies all across government and see the different examples. And I just want to give you a real quick one. Nobody wants to have to borrow money to go to college. But the federal, but financial aid people at the Department of Education have done a really fabulous job of using social media to have online chats, et cetera. And one of the things that they've found is, just as Amanda was saying, and as you were saying, Jason, is that just acknowledging me, where people will retweet, like, oh my God, OMG, DOE retweeted me. And it's huge. And it's really because government is so faceless. So one of the things that we could give them is a face.
And that's one thing that we've started doing at USDA when we have kind of Twitter chats or Google Plus Hangouts, where it has been us, you know, feds talking. And while we can certainly provide value and insight, technical expertise to participating in a program or kind of explaining what a new policy means, we've started to flip the script and we ask questions of users. So whether it's, you know, an organization and we're talking about the Farm Bill, we want to hear from people what My Farm Bill means. You know, we've said our word. But we actually want to hear the stories and allow that forum for conversation to happen. And I think that's really important too, kind of facilitating those conversations, even, you know, with budget situations and less travel, you can sometimes get around the table less often. So doing that in a virtual space.
Yeah, so we can't give them a hamburger, but we can give them a feeling of being heard and being effective.
Mm-hmm. If I could get a hamburger from USDA, I'd rather eat one than if I get a hamburger from GSA. That's not your core competency in the least bit. Just saying. One thing that kind of occurred to me, Amanda, as you were talking about it, is what do you do? How do you deal with the fact, or have you seen, maybe you haven't seen this, but that you have a set of people who see you have a Google Hangout or a Twitter conversation, and you have a set of people who hate the Farm Bill or hate something that you're doing, mm-hmm. that they all just don't gang up on you, and all of a sudden you're just hearing the same thing from 10 people or 100 people that say, we hate this. And you're going, oh, maybe we should hate this. It's very similar to what regulations.gov mm-hmm. saw, where you saw people all of a sudden sending in this form letter, 1,000 form letters that all said, we hate this regulation or whatever. Have you seen that or people that haven't gotten there yet?
We have seen it, but not often. And what's really interesting is when the community kind of self-regulates, right? So you have the people who are very passionate about agriculture or nutrition or whatever the issue is, and they talk to, you know, the other side and say, hey, guys, listen, this is important to us. Or, you know, they start to have their own dialogue. So we don't have to necessarily get in the middle of it. Because we have such a broad mission, we have a lot of different conversations. So I think that's expected to have some of that.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We come back. We have some more to talk about, including predictive analytics. You're listening to the panel discussion, Constituent Servicing and Federal Agencies, brought to you by Xerox on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Federal contact center agencies are facing a seismic generational shift as an estimated 40 million baby boomers approach retirement and a growing number of millennials enter the workforce. Is your agency ready to handle this shift? Contact center consolidation is an excellent way to realize efficiencies and improve constituent satisfaction. Learn how Xerox can help your agency meet the needs of all citizens who have questions. Visit Xerox.com/are you ready. That's Xerox.com/are you ready.
Welcome back. You're listening to the panel discussion, Constituent Servicing and Federal Agencies, sponsored by Xerox on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jason Miller. Our panelists today are Gwen Costin, the Director of Digital Services and Innovation Center in the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at the General Services Administration, Amanda Nguyen, the Director of Web Communications for the Department of Agriculture, and Ron Woody, a Senior Solutions Architect for Xerox Federal. We talked a lot about the impact of social media. We talked a lot about not just paving the cow paths. I still love that expression from back in the Bush administration with Mark Forman, if you guys remember him. But let's talk about how you know that you're heading down the right path. And the idea behind that is obviously predictive analytics. I think you all brought it up earlier. Let me turn to Ron first, since you probably provide these services to some constituents. How does it work? What are you looking at when you talk about predictive analytics for constituent services?
Well, it just depends on the depth of the information. Sometimes it can be as simple as for one of our major commercial clients, we noticed every time a new customer gets a bill, they call in. Every time you change your bill, everybody calls in. So therefore, you can go back to the client, you can go back to the agency or whatever and say, let's be a little bit more informative. Let's educate since we know. And that's a very simple aspect of predictive analytics. But you know that when you change something, you're going to get a certain number of calls, a certain number of tweets, a certain number of emails. So let's be proactive on the front end, whether it's with your IVR, or whether it's information that you put in with the new bill to make things happen. As far as the statistics and everything, I mean, it drives efficiencies. It drives, you can actually drive the communication method you want to use with, whether it be with incentives or in any number of ways to make sure that you're prepared for what may be the next need from the customer or the constituent.
As soon as you said, you know, if you can get ahead of the curve, you can cut back on your costs, because every one fewer call to the Correct. Customer service center, you can put a monetary label to it and say, well, it's less money. I mean, are you guys able to do that for customers?
I think at times, yes. And at times, I mean, that's what we do, is try to make things more efficient, try to make things quicker, try to make things less expensive, whether it be for the government or our commercial clients. And that's key. That's what we're in the business of. And fortunately, I work for a company that's been an innovator for 75 years. I mean, they've been at the forefront of technology, so it kind of helps.
Let me turn to Gwen for a second. When GSAs, because you guys do such a broad job around customer service, are you guys starting to help agencies or use predictive analytics to tell agencies, hey, we're seeing this uptick at this time of the month or during this quarter when taxes are due or when the checks aren't, you know, Social Security checks go out or anything like that?
One of the things that we were able to do over this past year as part of the implementation of the White House digital strategy was we actually implemented a government-wide view of web traffic. And we call it the Digital Analytics Program. And we have common code on over 3,000 websites in the federal government, and this continues to increase. And what we're able to see for the first time are these types of broader trends. And so where an agency has the view of their own data, they actually don't know what's going on across different agencies. And so let me just give you a couple of quick examples of some of the things we're able to see. And it really piggybacks on some of the things that Ron and Amanda were saying. One of the things we found is that last year on Christmas Day, most people who access government websites did it from mobile devices. There wasn't like a huge uptick of people, but the people who were using government sites on Christmas were doing it from mobile. And so that actually, you know, if you're trying to get some information out at that time, it better be mobile friendly, for example. The other thing we were able to do is kind of compare across industry and non-industry. So overall, we're seeing about 20% of traffic coming to websites coming from mobile devices. Although, you know, Facebook sees, you know, 70% of their traffic coming from mobile devices. But some of our agencies are seeing maybe a 1% uptake via mobile. And so from taking a look at that information and those comparative pieces of information, you can say, does this actually make sense? Going back to the very beginning of this conversation, what are our customers doing and how are they interacting with us at this time? I'll give you another example, too, in terms of looking at those predictive analysis. And this is not from GSA. It's from our friends at HHS and the team over at AIDS.gov. They were a big innovator in the mobile space, in part because they saw that their traffic was increasing from mobile devices. But rather than say this is what it is right now, they were looking at the trending, and the trend was going up. And that's a real critical thing. And then they stepped back and said, what are the questions people are asking us on mobile devices? And it was very different than what was happening on the desktop. And so if you think about the information that's being provided on AIDS.gov, On the desktop, people were looking kind of about symptoms. On the mobile device, they were saying, what happens if my condom broke? So it's really in the moment piece. And so then they were saying, well, in our mobile experience, we need to address these types of information as our traffic is increasing in this way. And so then segmenting the traffic into those different ways and meeting those expectations and those needs based upon data.
I want to go back to the piece about the digital government strategy and the view of web traffic.
Yeah.
What's happening to that data? Because I can imagine it's so valuable data because you're seeing who's coming, when they're coming, how often they're coming. I know, for instance, federalnewsradio.com, we know that we get spikes, you know, at first thing in the morning, at lunch, and at the end of the day. And we know the weekends people don't visit us as much, though they should. What happens to that data? And then maybe we'll see have Amanda join us.
I want to back away from one of the things you said. We don't know who's coming.
Yes.
People are coming.
We know, right.
Right. But
the numbers.
We don't know that.
We don't know that Ron Woody has visited the USDA Farmers Market website three times last week and
we should
stay away from the farmers market.
Thank you for doing so.
Yes, it's much appreciated. The one thing is that this is, even though we have over 3,000 properties that are there, it's still nascent. So we're still looking at the implementation. So it's hard at this point, as we're still bringing people on, to make a lot of assumptions. So the things that I say are very much caveated, is that we don't have the entire universe at this point. And we're increasingly getting that. So I'm super excited about that. And so with that caveat, what we're seeing is that the data in its aggregate, because there's so much of it, is really hard to make any decisions based on, because it's just huge. And as we were talking earlier, that there are all these different needs and different people. And even within USDA, you probably see that your roll-up data has certainly a value, but it's hard to make decisions based upon it. So it's really kind of the comparative data, in whether it's in subgroups or whether it's within an agency, in different ways. I think that's where the value is on that.
Let me turn to Amanda real quick as well. When you guys are you guys doing predictive analytics? Sounds like you are, just based on, you said, the mobile device example you used earlier. And then are you starting to get data, for instance, from GSA's government-wide view?
So we actually had our analytics program implemented before the digital strategy came out. So that was really exciting for us, now that we actually have a year plus worth of data. So we can look back. And a lot of what we do is seasonally driven. So we know when kids are headed back to school, our USDA for Kids page kind of creeps up in the hits or the searches and whatever that may be. So we know, well, let's get it on the homepage and make it easier for our users to discover that information. We have a digital analytics specialist whose job is to kind of look at this work and see what recommendations we can make. So, of course, we have to identify what are the goals, because there's so much. We really want to maximize and optimize the reach of our content and make sure that the right folks are seeing it. We don't know who are coming, but we know where they might be from. So if we're doing a big rollout in a particular state, we can look and see, did we get an increase in traffic from that region? And if we didn't, why not? Maybe we need to do some more targeted outreach and make sure that people in that locality are accessing the information. And it also helps improve our delivery and distribution. So we know, based on data, that we have certain dead zones where people just don't open our messages. It's pretty much lunchtime and 5 to 6 p.m. when people are commuting home. Fridays are kind of a wash. So we resend things or avoid those times to make sure that we get the right number of opens or clicks or, whatever it might be.
And the interesting thing is, you're not looking for clicks because you have an advertiser, well, I do respect Ron, who's looking for, page views and all that. Because you're really trying to reach people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes back to this initial part of the conversation about expectations. If people don't look at it between 5 and 6, why are you sending it at 5 and 6?
Yep.
We can send it at 2 and 3 and 4 and then really get people feel like, oh, the government is listening to me subconsciously in many ways.
Sure.
Is that kind of what you're seeing, is how you kind of make certain decisions?
Absolutely. And we give that feedback to agencies who all have access to the same data, but we try to provide that guidance to them to make it easier for trends we're seeing across the board. We see the same thing for the type of content that's sent out. Infographics, huge. We do kind of weekly reports that are more granular, and then monthly for larger trends to see what might be happening and where those, you know, ups or downs are going. And we see consistently that certain types of media and materials are more popular with our users. So we try to, you know, be more efficient with the limited time and resources we have and do those things instead of perhaps what we may have been doing historically.
This is an excellent segue because predictive analytics falls into that big data category, one of the many buzzwords in the IT world, but it also falls into cloud, and we've talked a little bit about mobile. Let me start with Gwen from a technology perspective, and none of us are really technologists per se, but are you seeing there's a move to cloud, people are really focusing on the big data piece, like, or are all these things kind of impacting the idea of customer service?
Absolutely, Jason. I think that there's like, you know, a perfect storm of a lot of things that are occurring right now that weren't before. And so, you know, I was talking to my husband the other day, and we were talking about, he found an old Trio or whatever the heck it was, this old device, like a Palm Pilot.
The Palm Pilot, right.
And you know, my son looked at it like it was, you know, came out of, you know, Jurassic Park. And I remember the day I walked into the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, my first government job, and they handed me a BlackBerry and a flip phone. That was only 8 years ago. Those devices were not the same 8 years ago. And so I think it's really crazy that we're moving so quickly. And so when we're looking at things like cloud, what cloud allows us to do is to really take this idea of mobile and make it real. So before, if you had to keep, my husband used to have a cool watch where he used to put it in front of the screen and would download data to it. This was like in the 90s. It was crazy, wacky guy. but right now, you don't have to put it to a screen. It's available. We have Wi-Fi everywhere. We have 4G.
Plus the Bluetooth, the idea that, you know, if you have it to your phone, to the watch.
It's right. And so, you know, I actually, when my husband bought me a Kindle for Christmas 2 years ago, I opened up my Kindle. And as I opened it up, I signed into my well-used Amazon account. And I was there on chapter 3 of The Ender's Game, which I had started reading on my iPhone device. And so it's all there at the same time, and the cloud allows that. And then that means that I expect that wherever I am, I could get it. So I, at home, you know, my son and I, we both have a phone that actually you could do IM, you could text not just on the phone, but from my computer to the phone. And so I have his text in front of me or on my phone. And so these are the expectations that we're dealing with. And this is enabled by these great devices that we have in our hands and the cloud. And because we could not do it before the cloud. And so how does this change everything? Every single step of the way.
Ron, from your perspective, when you talk to your clients in the federal government, are they automatically going to cloud? You have to take them to the cloud? Because, I mean, we think it's been around forever, but really only gotten popular, if you will, or acceptable in the last 2 or 3 years.
Sure. It depends on their level of knowledge. And, I mean, security is still, let's face it, the government deals with information and security that the rest of the world doesn't have to. So there's still that need for security. So you have to ensure them of that. And, yeah, you're seeing that they want to do it because they understand it's the instantaneousness. It's also for disaster and recovery and COOP. It's almost a requirement because you don't have to have the facility. You can have the work at home for the wounded warriors and things like that. And that's what the cloud just, it's almost like Gwen was saying, a better way of life.
And as Amanda was saying actually earlier, when you have the upticks, when it's back to school, you could use the cloud to make things bigger. And then when things come back down October, November, make it smaller. Let's look to the future a little bit. Where's customer service going? Where are agencies heading with the idea of customer service? Let me start with Gwen. We'll work our way down. From GSA's perspective, you have this great tool, the data analysis tool that you talked about. What's coming next? Where do you see not just that, but other approaches going?
Well, I want to talk a little bit not just from GSA's perspective because my space is really more on the government wide. So I'll just take it up another level on that, if you don't mind. Well, even if you do mind,
I don't. That's why you're here.
You know, one of the things that we're seeing right now is when we're talking about the cloud and we're talking about data, but it's really kind of the decoupling of information from a web page or a website. It's really looking at the mobility of information and services in a way that's very different. We're at the very beginning of this. I mean, there's been some examples for decades in government in terms of, you know, making web services available. But what we're looking at is, I was actually read an article yesterday where the author was talking about when we're looking at a web page, we're looking at clicks and scrolling. But we're not really clicking and scrolling. We're pinching and zooming. We're touching. Yeah. And so that our metaphors are have to change to make this information more available. And so one of the things that we're seeing in open data is really a discussion about how do we open up this content, make it more granular, and make it available in more types of ways. And if you look at an example of somebody who has done a great job, and I will actually even say that they've had it easy, is the Consumer Financial Protection Board. And the reason why, there's super talented people there, but they got to start at the point when these resources were available. And so they don't have a legacy bunch of stuff that they've had to go through. So they've been in this responsive design, looking at information and data in a way that no one, that's how they started. So they didn't have to go back to the way things were done in before. And I think that they have a model that we're going to be looking at.
All right. Ron, Amanda, you each get about 15 seconds. Where are we heading now? Gwen took all your time.
Go ahead, Amanda.
Amanda, go first.
I think it's going to be more instantaneous feedback with more sophisticated tools. Government can be a little late to the game on this, but I think that as the tools become more readily available, cheaper and accessible in terms of 508 and everything else, I think that it will just be part of everyone's work and not a specific division.
All right, and Ron, you get the last word.
As a baby boomer, we're a large percentage of the population, and we've been spoiled our whole lives with instant information, instant food, fast food, microwaves. And I think the government just needs to be prepared for this mass number of people who have been politically active to be involved more in their government and want that response.
All right, very good. Well, that's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to the panel discussion, Constituent Servicing and Federal Agencies, sponsored by Xerox on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm your host, Jason Miller. I'd like to thank our panelists for their time and insight today. Gwen Costin is the Director of Digital Services Innovation Center in the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at the General Services Administration. Ron Woody is a Senior Solutions Architect for Xerox Federal. And Amanda Nguyen is the Director of Web Communications at the Department of Agriculture. If you missed any of this panel discussion, please go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword search, Constituent Servicing.
Thank you for listening to the Constituent Servicing and Federal Agencies panel, sponsored by Xerox, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The entire discussion could be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com.